Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, Jug Life Podcast, joined today by Director of Education and Elite Football Performance. I think there I'm missing some words.
Yeah, no, that's it. You got the gist of it. It's a lot of words there.
Jay Agbow, we're here at the incredible Mamba Sports Academy in Thousand Oaks. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Thanks for coming up here and checking us out today.
Oh, yeah, man. My pleasure. So we were in watching your combine group, going through some speed work, going through some positional work. Before we get into a little bit about their training, tell us more about your illustrious role here.
So my role here is really to help put everything together for educational perspective. Our sports performance team, we are trying to improve. The saying we like to use is improve 1% better each day, and really embracing the Mamba mentality. Kobe was actually in yesterday, and one of the guys asked him what the Mamba mentality meant to him. And to him and to us, it really is just constant curiosity. So always trying to learn and admit that we don't know everything, and we're trying to get better by doing so. So appreciate you a couple weeks ago coming in and doing the Skype call or FaceTime. I can't remember what we used, but whatever form of technology, coming in and speaking to our guys. And that's what we're trying to do, have guest speakers. And then in between, when we can't schedule speakers, have some of our sports performance coaches kind of present on things that have inspired them and kind of influenced their career, then hopefully share that, and everybody can get a little bit nugget from each session. So,
and with that, tell us a little bit about, we're going to talk more about Kobe and your intensive meeting with him yesterday, but about this incredible facility that we're in.
So Mamba Sports Academy was started 3 years ago by Chad Faulkner and a group of other individuals. That is, the goal here is to provide all-inclusive facility for anyone that's looking to train. Right now, as you look out here, we have 2 full sand volleyball courts, 5 basketball/volleyball courts, and then a sports performance area. Also, I think the thing that sets us aside is the integrated sports medicine. So we have full medical facility here, some imaging, recovery center, and then as you saw during the tour earlier, we have an esports training ground where the future of gaming can come and prepare to make money playing video games one day. So it's kind of crazy that we have that available, but there are people that participate in that and are learning and developing their careers that way. Also have a homeschool program that we bring in. So some of these kids, we've made arrangements with their families or whatnot to come in and provide them with sports performance, or basically PE, since they don't always have, facilities to do that or interact with other kids. So they're able to come in, I believe, once a week on Wednesday. We bring in kids, arrange for the local, yesterday we had the firefighters here, so they could do tours of that, as well as come in and do PE classes with a big group of people that they normally don't interact with. So it's pretty cool. There's also, as you're familiar, Gracie Baja Jiu-Jitsu.
Most importantly,
Everyday Pojada.
Everyday Pojada.
Yeah, try to go at least 3 to 4 days a week, but it's right upstairs, so I don't have any excuses anymore.
World champ Gabriel Argis as the professor there.
Indeed.
And yeah, so 100,000 square feet.
100,000 square feet.
That we're in here, so pretty phenomenal.
130 plus employees. I don't know the total number, but there's a lot.
Yeah. There seems like there's enough rooms here and very nice furniture. I might just move in. We'll see.
We have the food.
Yeah. You guys wouldn't even notice. I could hide out up here. And so I want to talk more about the combine training you got going on. And I know we can't probably talk specifics of the people, but just more some ideas about the training. So you had 30 athletes.
We have 26 athletes total right now.
Yeah. And it's obviously very comprehensive. You have the position coaches and nutrition and mobility and physical therapy and speed training and lifting and all that. So tell me a little bit about your role in overseeing the combine preparation for these guys.
So my role is really to oversee any and all field work testing. We have a speed team, multi-directional team that I let them do their thing. They're the experts in that field. But we just really monitor and adjust the loads and intensities and kind of correlate that to what we're doing in the weight room as well. And I work closely with Jill, who is our athletic trainer. She runs the medical side of the house under Bo Daniels. And so,
oh, I know Bo.
Yeah, yeah, you're familiar with Bo. So, yeah, he, as a matter of fact, we talked about you the other day when you did the presentation. So, obviously, he's at the Super Bowl right now enjoying that life. So, you didn't get to run into him today. But we kind of all work together as a team to make sure that these guys get anything and everything possible. You know, the whole idea of not leaving any stone unturned. So, when they do come in, when they first report full biomechanic assessment, SPARTA, which they do at the NFL Combine, BOD Pod, sit down with nutrition, and then, you know, we review with all their medical histories, things they can and can't do in the weight room, and we make adjustments accordingly. So everybody, when they come in, you know, full comprehensive testing, we're prepared to deal with a lot of these guys, you know, just most of their seasons ended when everybody else had not a lot of bowl games for the younger undrafted free agents that may not be making it. Then the bigger games or bigger names, they played late into the season, had bowl games, whatnot. So we have to kind of, with those guys, really just manage their injuries and make sure they're healthy enough to perform at the combine.
So you've got this big group of guys. What do you think is the most challenging part as you're trying to strike this balance between the field work and the weight room and all the different things that they need to be ready for?
I think the biggest challenge is, with such a large group, managing their needs, individual needs. So there are some guys that maybe need a little bit more positional work, some guys that need a little bit more with speed, strength, whatever it is. It's just, at the end of the day, managing that within our group context and time framework that we have. So we actually have four different groups going out of big group of 26. We have four schedules going. And we manage it that way. They're all on the field at the same time, but if guys need extra work here or there, that's how we manage it and shift things around a little bit. So it's just trying to treat each person as an individual, all within the group context and group setting. So,
and you know, a lot of our listeners and viewers, they're powerlifters, they're weightlifters, they love the weight room side of things. But getting these guys to run the fastest 40s and have the highest verticals and best broad jumps and everything, it's clearly about more than just the weight room.
It is.
Probably more about the not weight room stuff than it is about the weight room. But if you had to pick, you know, a movement or a strategy in the weight room that you've seen have really good carryover to guys sprinting, what would that be?
Honestly, as much as I love the weight room, I'd have to say less is more with these guys. It's really managing their loads. So that's the strategy I think that is most important for us right now. So most of these guys have had, obviously, long seasons. They've been training since winter conditioning, had their off-season program, had a season. They're coming to us. So at this point in 8 weeks, it's not like we have the time to sit down and make these massive transformations. So we really just have to manage with what they're able to handle physically and then also balance that out and understand that for a lot of them, they just need to clean up technique out on the field, whether it's with the 40, change of direction, drills, whatever it may be. So we can't get greedy, or at least I can't get greedy in the weight room and push those lows and those intensities. Yeah. So for me, the overall strategy, as generic as it sounds, is really less is more.
Yeah, as in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Sure, you could put, you know, 30 pounds on some guy's squat in 8 weeks, but the energy that would cost compared to everything else he's got to do just wouldn't be worth it.
And it's really what's more important for the guys, right? Like, I mean, sure, do they need to be stronger? Do they need to be more physically prepared? Yes, absolutely. But at the same time, what's going to catch the eye of everybody else and the combine or your pro day, it's really the drills. Nobody cares about how much you squat, you know, how much you really do bench or what your physical characteristics are. You got to look the part. Of course, they want to see what you can bench 225. But, you know, as we talked earlier, as long as they can fit within those averages, you know, what's expected of your position group, then there's no issues. You know, if you're a guy that's maybe benching one rep, okay, now we really need to do a little bit more work with you and get you up to the 4 or 5 rep range.
Yeah.
And hopefully be able to get there in 8 weeks. But if you're a guy that's already in the 20s, mid-20s, I'm not winning by getting you to the 30s.
Yeah.
We win by making sure you're able to do all your position work and perform football-related activities.
So on that note, I know you were right previous to this with the Toronto Argonauts in the CFL, and then when I first met you with the Los Angeles Rams and had other NFL...
No, I was actually only with the Rams. I did 4 years with the Rams, starting out as an intern and then eventually moving up to be the top assistant for Rock Gullickson.
And then, so you've seen you've seen these guys when it matters, and you've seen the best in the world at it, Aaron Donald and Andrew Whitworth, you know, guys like that. And obviously it's not about the combine then once you're in the league. So we promote you from the Mamba Sports Academy to now, Jay, you're the commissioner of the NFL and you're going to redo the combine. if you just make one change or one new test or different test in there that you think could give a better indication of their actual ability to play football, what would that be?
I would actually take out the bench press, in my opinion. Yeah. I'd take out the bench press. I think there are other things that can be used. I think the value of on-field movement is probably more beneficial when it comes to football as itself, because these guys are football players first and foremost, right? They're not weightlifters. They're not powerlifters. They have to be able to play the sport. So I think being able to see them perform better drills, maybe a different variety of drills. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell each position group, because I'm not a position coach. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert in those areas, but I think seeing them move and perform skills related to what they have to do on the field would probably be more beneficial than a 225 bench press.
Yeah, I've always thought that the rep test for the bench was a dumb test because it's a strength endurance test in a power sport. And I figure like NFL this year made about $9 billion, so they can probably afford like a couple tendo units, maybe the wide receivers and DBs put 225 on and do a triple, and they measure the watts or the power output.
Exactly.
And the linebackers and tight ends and running backs are 275 and the linemen are 315. Because, you know, a couple of years ago, people were trying to, and this is also just the culture of like overanalyzing these guys who are the really high draft picks, like you got to find something wrong. When Clowney was going to go first, like, well, he only did 17 reps at 225. Like, besides the guy's arms are 7 feet long,
it's ridiculous. You know, like,
I watched him do it and I was like, man, that bar is flying, just moving so fast.
Exactly.
And I'm much more interested in how fast he can deliver one incredibly hard two-handed punch.
Exactly.
Then, you know, you get some real stumpy D tackle with short arms and it's like, oh, he did 45, but he can't do one super
fast. I mean,
he
can't hold that position and actually hold the edge and, you know, be explosive enough to throw a tackle on his backside. But I think, you know, the reality is you see what a big event it is.
Mm-hmm.
And a moneymaker. So for a common fan, I think for you and I and anyone else involved in the sports world, you understand the value of maybe getting 3 reps and looking at their power outputs.
Yeah.
But for the common fan that just watches it and turns it on, I don't think they're going to understand that as well. So it's very easy to understand, hey,
sure,
they did 225 for how many reps? And at the same time, you know, Joe Smith, whoever may be, going to the gym and say, hey, I saw this guy do this many reps. And, of course, you know, it translates. They go in there and they try to hit a couple reps, and it's something they can relate to versus, obviously, if they don't have those units to measure power output.
Definitely.
They can't do that. And it doesn't spark that conversation, I guess.
I got plenty of powerlifter friends who are doing 40, 50, 60 reps, and I think they think they're ready for a tryout. But sorry, guys, probably least indicative test of actual football success. So you've worked in the professional sector. You're working now in the private sector with aspiring coaches out there. What kind of advice, career path advice, could you give them?
That's a great question. I think find what drives you, as far as, you know, whether you're a coach in the private sector and you want to work with a certain population. You know, we have coaches here that specialize working with boot camp groups. That is what they love to do. Find what inspires you. You want to work with athletes, get your foot in the door there, whether it's volunteering, high school, college. I started my career volunteering at Washington State as an intern and slowly went from there. I found that I wanted to work with football. And in my role here, I work with professional athletes, mainly football. Pretty soon we're going to have the NFL offseason guys coming in. But there are guys here that specialize in working with certain populations, whether it's track, soccer, whoever it may be. Find where your niche is or what you're passionate about and then just chase it and just push for it.
What years were you at Washington State?
I was there. I started as an intern in 2007, and my last year was, I left in 2011.
Okay. He would have been there before that. Again, Ian Walsh, he was as a discus thrower.
No, I'm not familiar.
You would have known if he was there.
If I was there, yeah, at the time.
So. Very, very strong guy.
Very strong. Well,
yeah.
There you go. So I missed him.
The as you're looking at the training of football players, you know, most listeners probably are not getting the opportunity to work with NFL Combine and pro players, more high school guys. Looking at the development of high school players, what are some things that you would really emphasize to maybe best prepare them to have a chance to play college football?
Stick to the basics. I'd say not. Don't make it too complicated. I think when I was a GA in college and did my time at Illinois State, one of the things I noticed was a lot of these guys came in from high school and they didn't just develop basic strength. They were, you know, with coaches that are trying to do too much, whether it's trying the newest fad or, you know, trying the newest drill, whatever it may be, even when it comes to position work, just stick to the basics. And even as you get to the pro level, you see when I was in the NFL, you could tell the guys that came from, to me, the best programs or that I respect in the college game, where they understood the basics. So they could squat, they could clean, they could do all the basic movements. And then you throw anything else complicated at them, sure, they can handle that as well. But they understood and could perform the basics. And they were structurally sound, they were strong, they were physical, and they had what it took. And I don't think, especially with the guys that are ultra talented, you know, I just revert back to less is more. There's guys that we talked about, genetic freaks, like we don't have to do a whole lot to them to get the best out of them. We can manipulate those loads and volume and intensity, and a lot of times they're going to adapt way better than your general population person anyway. So you don't have to throw so much at them that their systems get blown out.
Yeah, and especially you guys in speed power sports who are capable of these great sprinting and jumping efforts, they're deriving such huge stimulus from that going in to have, you know, anything that would look like a powerlifter or weightlifter's level of weight room volume,
oh no,
they're going to be smoked for a month after that. Yeah.
So, like, for example, even today, you know, we're going to go in and we're scheduling 225 test. We're 5 weeks in, getting closer. Going to do a test with them. And then we still have to do upper body work on the backside, but I'm cutting everything down. Mm-hmm. We have to. They're going to be so mentally smoked from going in, the hype, yelling. You know, we're trying to set it up kind of like the combine where we're going to have two warm-up stations and one single bench.
Well, John Lott's just down the road at the Chargers. You get him over here,
he starts slapping guys and yelling at him. And so I don't know if they're ready for that. we got to progress them to that stage. But, you know, when we're done with it, we still need to get some accessory work done afterwards. But we have to be smart about it. Right? Yeah. At that point, we know they're going to be fried. There's no point in getting everything that we would do on a typical day. I have to cut that volume down half, if not less. So we're going to see how they are once we're done with that and then make a judgment call at that point. There's ideal, and then we have to adjust, as you know, I mean, on any given day.
Yeah, I think that's a hugely important thing for young coaches to understand and people managing their own program is when you're talking about the hype part of things. I'm like very calm guy, lift very calm, compete very calm. But especially in the training, you know, I see videos of powerlifters, they're hitting the ammonia cap and everybody's slapping them and they got whatever metal song on and they're doing their thing in training. I'm like, how the hell do you do that four times a week? Like, I would be exhausted. I'd be ready to take a nap after one set. It's like, that's a stress and a stimulus that has to be managed. Like, yeah, it's not weights on a bar, it's not sprinting, so it's harder to quantify that fatigue. But it is substantial.
It's stress.
Yeah, and then even with these guys, I always, you know, go back to Charlie Francis' quote, weights follow speed, and not just from a chronological sense, but when they're out there doing max speed work and training jumps and working with the position coaches, they have a huge day out there. It's got to be less in the weight room.
And so, you know, going back to the earlier part of the conversation, it's really the most challenging aspect of my job now is, it's not writing the program and prescribing the sets and reps. It's what are we doing to manage everything? Because today, as you saw when we were down there, they're working. Granted, the weather didn't work out. So they're still doing top end drills, got some stuff on the curve. So we need to pull back and just be aware of that and not get into the weight room and try to crush their souls.
Yeah. And I think a lot of coaches and, you know, myself included in this, like, I love to program. I love to lay out, you know, this optimal structure, everything, but people get locked into that and they forget about, like, here, the coach's most important tool, watching how the athlete's responding and to what they're doing that day. And if they look tired, it's probably because they are tired, you know, talking to the athletes, asking them, how do you feel today? Not just like that empty question, how you feeling? And they say fine, and you go on about your day, but diving a little bit deeper in that to get that feedback. to be able to make those small, you know, intra session, day to day adjustments.
And that's the big thing. I think we pride ourselves to, and you know, any other facility, right? And any coach, I think it, whether it's a high school level or the professional level, you benefit from building those relationships with the guys. So, you know, not only are we doing these wellness questionnaires to see where they're sore, or what they're feeling, but sitting down with them when they come in, you know, taking a few minutes, they always show up a few minutes early, conversate with them. You know, like today, I know there's an individual that's probably not going to do really well on the bench. Not because he's tired, but he has to worry about his fiance and his baby getting to the airport. That's something that's on his mind. There was a reason that when I was watching him do his drills, I was just like, he looks off today. I didn't know. And maybe he's going to be better in the weight room, but I have to be aware of that. So I went over, asked him what was going on. If something was bothering him. Nothing's bothering him, but he was worried about, yeah. Hey, they need to get to the airport at this time. It's raining. The weather's bad. What do I do?
Yeah.
That is a stressor, and we need to be aware of those things.
Yeah, you got to account for all of it. So director of education, leaving out the esteemed information from Juggernaut Training Systems, what are some of your favorite resources, education resources you'd recommend to coaches?
Education resources, you know, I think from a coaching perspective, I love Conscious Coaching, Brett Bartholomew. Consider him a friend, love chatting with him. You know, some of the other resources are just in general, I'd say YouTube. You have to filter things. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have to filter what you're going through. But I think you're able to find a lot of information and bring, you know, kind of go down a rabbit hole is the term I like to use. You know, the other thing, too, is I use my peers and friends as a resource. You know, I don't even remember how we were introduced to each other. But since then, obviously, you've guided me in a few directions. We just talked earlier about trying to bring people in for education. And so I rely on the people I meet. And so, you know, whether... For me, it's really the peer group that you surround yourself with, and then also reaching out to other coaches that you may respect. So, you know, for example, when I was let go by the Rams after the 2016 season, I believe, I can't remember, but, you know, I just reached out to other coaches that I respected and saw if I could get the foot in the door to meet with them. You know, I called former players, saw if they'd set up appointments or get me in the door with Scott Cochran and other coaches. Mm. And I was able to get in with Scott Cochran. Then he introduced me to other coaches and got me in to visit Coach Moffitt at LSU. So I think the biggest thing is just being vulnerable and reaching out to people. Yes, they may say no, but what's the worst that can happen, right? Yeah. They don't take your call. They don't respond to your email. Okay, that's fine. You move on to someone else. But for me, I think just reaching out to anyone and everyone that you respect. And then, you know, like I said, YouTube, there's a lot of things you can find on there. You know, looking through your stuff, that's a rabbit hole in and of itself. But then you can relate and see who some of the people are that have inspired you or that you deal with. And that's one of the things I told the interns yesterday during our education session was, you know, you might have one coach that you respect, but that one coach didn't just come out with this idea off the top of their head. They had to be inspired by somebody else because you didn't just wake up one morning with this Juggernaut training system. You've obviously learned from others, tried to improve on it, and you have now obviously inspired others and they're making adjustments to it. So I think with that being said, just finding out who inspires you and then kind of backtracking and seeing who their influences are and then going in that direction. And that's kind of the way I've followed things. It's like I see who inspires me, then we see who kind of guided them a little bit and then try to make connections. It's just coaching tree. And then just reach out to anyone and everyone. And if they take the time to speak with you, like somebody will drop a nugget of knowledge on you.
Yeah.
Like, I may not know everything, but hopefully if we talk to someone or whoever's watching this, they get one nugget. That's it.
I say it at the start of my seminars. You know, my goal today is to answer all of your training questions. Not that I have all the answers, but I probably know someone who does.
Yep.
You know, or at least can direct them somewhere to that effect. And the point about, you know, reaching out to the coaches and visiting places, I think the internet and social media and everything has been tough on young coaches because they think they can find everything there on the internet, but it gives them the opportunity. It's so much easier to find and connect with a lot of these coaches as well, but the art of going to seminars and conferences and actually networking with people. And I say at seminars, you know, the most I learn about training at seminars is not during a presentation. It's in between talking to people or out to dinner after or getting beers or whatever it is in those conversations. I started coaching high school football when I was 19, and I remember going to like the AFCA conferences, and I was the youngest guy there pretty much every time, but getting to meet older coaches, and I remember meeting Larry Johnson Sr., the D-line coach from Penn State, because I listened to his presentation, and then I went and talked to him.
Introduce yourself. Yeah.
And the same thing, track and field, my whole life. I didn't have, my coach was not able to be with me at a lot of meets because he was a college coach when I was in high school, and he was coaching his own people at meets. So I just went and talked to the other coaches, and Don Babbitt at Georgia and John Frazier when he was at Arizona, and still have relationships with those guys today. And that's how I learned about training, because I just kept asking questions. And
that's the way to go about it. I mean, you know, caveat on the whole YouTube comment. It's just, for me, that's just kind of like the starting ground. Like whether it's YouTube, Instagram, you hit it nail perfectly on the head, where it's like, you can't learn everything. Like, the reality is, I'm not going to learn everything by sitting down. Any of these guys, I told them too, like, if you're sitting down and watching all the JTS videos, yes, you're going to get a level of knowledge, but the greatest knowledge is sitting down and talking to someone. And so whether it's, you know, whether YouTube, Instagram, whatever it is, you find your inspiration, then reach out to those people. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the answers from a 10-second, 1-minute video snippet or whatever, or even going to conferences.
That's why I make like 40-minute long videos.
Yeah, you go in, like, you got to sit down. But then once you watch these videos, okay, get your nuggets of information, what you got, but then take the time to, whether it's email, slide into their DMs, or go to conferences and talk to people. And like you said, for me, the biggest thing is, like, when I was younger, the first conference I went to, I overwhelmed myself. I remember sitting there, and one of my mentors was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, I was sitting there taking notes from it, trying to go to every session.
Yeah.
And soon you realize that, hey, guess what? Stuff's on YouTube or on, you know, online. They put a link up. You can watch it, whatever. You can catch up on it, get the PowerPoints. Go talk to the people and get that knowledge. Like, spend one-on-one time with them.
Yeah, that in-person interaction, phone calls, the lost art of the phone call.
Yes.
Highly valuable in growing as a coach.
Especially if you're in the LA area and stuck in traffic. Like, seriously, a lot of time for that.
Yeah. Was yesterday the first time you'd met Kobe in person?
Yesterday, yes, was the first time.
How was it? Sum it up. Three words that sums it up.
One word. Intense.
Intense.
Intense. That's it.
You guys play one-on-one after?
Absolutely not.
No?
No. He was too busy for that. No. I think, you know, the reality is, he came up here, you know, got to meet with the guys, and just his demeanor, his aura. Fortunate to have been around other great athletes, other celebrities, whatever you want to call it. And his aura is just different, in the sense that everything he talks about, he was just very intense. His body language, you know, one of the guys asked him, you know, like, how do you focus on these different aspects of your life? And he said, no matter what it is, I'm all in. And he said, and when he said that, just, I mean, his sheer body language, but he said, if I'm eating, that's all I worry about. If I'm with my kids, that's all I'm focused on. If I'm watching TV, that's all I'm doing. No phone,
watch
nothing.
Watch the hell out of that TV.
Exactly. No, he said that. Watch the hell out of the TV. If I'm on the phone and texting, this is it. He's focused on being in the moment. So if you're coaching, okay, sure, you can have your phone out, but you're not coaching. Like, give everything to that moment. Give everything to that athlete. If, you know, the example of the guys, like, if you're watching film, put your phone away. Focus on watching film. Don't let there be distractors, because at the end of the day, like he said, he has no regrets. He did everything he could and focused on becoming the best at what he could, the best, you know, reaching that potential.
Yeah.
You know, leave the arguments for who's best to everybody else, right, to us fans, to decide who's the best of all time and all those other things. But just being able to give your all to that moment and not worry about anything else. And so it was just really interesting. I mean, just a very intense individual, even in retirement. So.
Well, with the bad weather today, I should have tried to catch a ride with him on the helicopter up here. Did he arrive in a helicopter yesterday?
You know, I can neither confirm nor deny.
All right.
I was indoors, so, I mean, I don't know. Is there a helipad?
We'll check
up there?
If there's a helipad on top of the Mamba Sports Academy.
Well, to be, I mean, there is actually potential for it. So
oh, yeah. I can totally see that.
By looking at the structure of the building, there's definitely potential there. So
if I was Kobe, I'd have a helipad on the top of this thing, so I'm sure he's done that as well. Where can people follow you, learn more about Mamba Sports Academy?
So Mamba Sports Academy on Instagram. They can follow me at j.agabao, j.aggabao on Instagram. I usually reply to anyone and everyone on there. Or if they want to email me, j@mambasa.com. So Mombasa.
All right.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Thanks for watching the Jug Life Podcast. Follow us on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. All those places, jtsstrength.com. Check out Juggernaut, all of our online coaching options. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star review, all that good stuff. Follow me at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training. check out my 2019 powerlifting clinics all around the country. And I'll see you next week. Thanks, bud.
Thank you. Appreciate it.